What's up, guys? It's your boy, Johnny Bananas, and I'll be covering all the treachery, deceit, backstabbing, and murder from Season 2 of The Traitors US on my podcast, Death, Taxes, and Bananas. I'll be joined all season by my fellow castmates to swap stories, provide all the behind-the-scenes antics, and sordid details from filming. So sally forth and join me for Season 2 of The Traitors every Saturday on the Ringer Reality TV podcast feed.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to Food News. I'm Juliette Littman.
I'm David Jacoby.
Before we put 30 minutes on the clock, it's our 100th episode.
Food News 2.0 is turning 100.
I can't believe it. It's like at least six times longer than Food News 1.0.
It brings me so much joy doing this show with you every week, Juliette. And it also brings me so much joy. And I'm still just honored and shocked that people, thousands of people listen to this every week, and it brings them joy too.
At least 100.
At least 100, right?
Yeah, we're going to celebrate with a little Prosecco. You were trying to open it. I was like, I can do it. So I hope I can. You need to talk while
yeah,
I do it.
Yeah, I will. I was opening the bottle of champagne, and then
Juliette
saw me struggling with the label a little bit. Like, she goes, you know, I'm really good at that. It's like untying a knot. It's like, there's no, it's binary. You either do it or don't.
Well, you were trending towards don't.
Well, you know what? See, you know I'm irresponsible, so I was going to do a little shake-up, thumb over, like spray around.
I'm not prepared to have that happen. That's like the time you spit juice in my face. Absolutely not.
I was thinking the same thing.
It's a hard no for me.
God, yeah. Oof. God. The second I did that, I was like, I regret that.
Well, there's nothing to regret here.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening.
Let's pour some Prosecco and put 30 minutes on the clock.
Minutes. Great topics this week.
Great topics going around the world, as you pointed out. We're beginning in France.
France.
Where two protesters threw soup at the Mona Lisa. This happens once in a while.
Yeah, we've been here before. People throwing food at the Mona Lisa. And the thing that hurts me is the people that do this always have, like, they're always promoting a cause that I back.
It's always the same cause. It's about climate change.
It was climate change, but this is more of a food-based thing.
Yeah, this is about protecting farmers and food sustainability.
Yeah, there's been protests in Paris with farms and rights and gas prices and whatnot. And what they called for, which is I found interesting, this group is calling for a food card worth 150 euros to be given to citizens each month to be used on food. And I thought to myself, that's called college. That's college.
Or is it called Spotify? Because we get a food card here at Spotify. It's pretty dope.
Look at that. Yeah. It sounds good.
It is good. It's great.
So I guess let's not throw things at the Mona Lisa next time we're there.
Here's my thing about the video footage of throwing the soup at the Mona Lisa. Most often, of most pictures I see of people at the Mona Lisa in Paris, there is a huge crowd around the painting. Like, huge.
Yes.
And there's actually no people around the painting.
And it was 11 in the morning.
Except for the soup throwers. So I'm just like, I'm calling bullshit on this. Like,
that's just off hours?
How did they make this happen with no crowd? That never happens. And then Mona Lisa always has a crowd.
And then the security guard's answer to this, which is absolutely like, if you gave me a list of things of how I would react to someone throwing pumpkin soup at the Mona Lisa and I was employed as a security guard there, deep, deep, deep down in that list would be get some Venetian blinds and then put some black Venetian blinds between the people and the protesters. And they shuffle around. They're clumsy with it. Like, it's not a quick response. And it's kind of like when the watching college football, they had those guys that hold up the towels to, like, mm-hmm. cover the signs. That's basically what they did.
Yeah, so they were blocking the adulterated painting from the rest of the audience. But apparently there wasn't anyone there, so it was fine. Yeah,
and I also feel like, we'll move on, and just to keep this more about football, because normally that's what people do. It's almost the Super Bowl. Is we need to treat these people like streakers. Mm. This shouldn't make it to food news. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the streakers, they used to show them on TV. Yeah. They stopped. It's like next time someone throws some soup at the Mona Lisa, just don't tell us about it. And then people will stop doing it.
Should we make a pact to stop covering it?
No. This is food news.
Okay. Okay.
This is what we do.
Just wanted to check with you on that.
Great.
All right, let's move on. Back here to America, where Chuck E. Cheese is releasing a cookbook. It's called Chuck E. Cheese and Friends Party Cookbook. I went to check it out on Amazon, $22.99.
Okay.
Jacoby, do you have kids?
I have kids.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys go to Chuck E. Cheese?
We go to other people's parties at Chuck E. Cheese, and we would never have parties at Chuck E. Cheese because this isn't just a parent thing. Everyone knows the food is awful.
Mm.
It is known. The food is terrible at Chuck E. Cheese. The pizza, I can't tell the difference between the pizza and the pizza box.
Mm.
Honestly.
That's even really kids, bad sign.
Even like 4-year-olds take a bite of the pizza and they're like, what is this shit? Chuck E. Cheese has the worst food. And sure, cookbook, whatever.
Well, I looked at the recipes because I was like, what are they having you make in here? And it looks like Chuck E. Cheese food. Like, it looks gross. But I'm also like, if you like it, they're giving you a way to make it. Obviously, cookbooks always look better in the cookbook than when you make it at home.
Yes.
But isn't like this kind of place actually really expensive too?
Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah.
I mean, you're having a party, so you're paying for like people to come out. It's a whole package. Okay, it's a whole racket.
When you go to Bolero, I know you can drop some serious Bolero. Cash on those like games and then you get food.
Yeah.
Like, this did seem a lot more economical to me than going to Chuck E. Cheese. But I have another question for you, because I think you have kids.
I have kids.
Would your kids ever want to like get a Chuck E. Cheese, like a Bolero cookbook, and like make their favorite Bolero dishes?
No, absolutely not. Not in a million years.
I was like, who is this for?
I don't know who it's for. I honestly... If you're getting this cookbook, I imagine you're in like the cookbook aisle. Imagine like a Barnes and Noble.
I'm imagining a Target, actually.
Okay,
or like a TJ Maxx, where I have
I assume there's
cookbooks.
It's next to other cookbooks. So why would you ever get the Chuck E. Cheese one?
I feel like this is the kind of thing where like a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle is like, oh, I just need to get a present for someone, and they get this or something.
Yes. Chuck E. Cheese is gonna get blockbustered very soon. I think Chuck E. Cheese is
almost out.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
yeah. It's
Bolero
a very dated experience
better.
When you're there.
Interesting. I feel like maybe in a few places they could still maintain it where like they don't have other great entertainment.
Yeah, like a Dave and Buster's kind of a thing. Sure.
Are they exactly the same? I've never been to Chuck E. Cheese, but I've been to Dave and Buster's. Yeah.
You're not missing anything.
All right, good to know. All right, let's move on to a big story out of China. And someone, we don't know who.
Influencer, not to be named.
Whose face was blurred in all stories about this, mm-hmm. though apparently this happened online. An influencer went to Costco and brought his own rice, brought their own rice. I don't know if it's a man or a woman.
Yeah, it's an influencer.
It's an influencer. Brought their own rice and asked the people at Costco who were giving out samples to put the sample on the rice so he mm-hmm. could have like a full meal.
Yeah.
Other times like, he just took the sample, but he went back for seconds from some carts. And this is causing a huge stir in China, apparently.
Yeah. Well, a couple things about it. Number one, it says the influencer whose name has not been shared was able to put together a full flight of samples, including pieces of chocolate, pistachio nuts, egg puffs, lamb rolls, and pork ribs. Not a bad haul, but this is what I want to talk to you about, Juliet. Okay. There's been a division amongst the people in the comments where some people are like, wow, this is genius. This is so good and brilliant. Thank God. And other people, here's a quote, while others called him greedy or said that taking his own side dish to Sam Club was going too far. where do you stand on the moral grounds of bringing rice and adding the samples to the rice and making a meal out of your experience?
I'm going to answer, but thank you for noting it was Sam's Club. I was incorrect. Sam's Club, not Costco.
Yeah, Sam's Club. There's 11 Sam's Club's locations in China starting to get a foothold.
Where do I stand on the moral ground here?
Yeah.
I stand with the influencer.
Yeah.
Part of Sam's Club is that they have things in abundance. So I don't think he's like taking away from anyone else's experience. He asked for the leftovers. So when there was extra, it was like kind of like his own way of combating food waste.
He was really polite.
Waste.
They noted. He was really polite.
He wasn't like impacting anyone else's experience. So what is wrong with this? Like, who cares?
Nothing.
Nothing's wrong with it. My biggest question is, why does the influencer have to remain anonymous?
That's a great question. I'm not familiar with the Chinese internet laws, but I think there's some, and they're not the same as they are here. That's all I have to say about that.
I
want Food News to be able to be accessed in China.
You're right. Okay, let's move on. Next story. We've talked about this quite a bit, including your own personal experience. Starbucks has an olive oil latte called an oleato.
Mm-hmm.
It is called a legit laxative.
Yes.
And it'll soon be available nationwide.
Yes. And as I've shared here on Food News, I thought about getting one. I spoke to the person at the barista at the Starbucks Reserve, and they said, do not do that. And I believe it doesn't taste good. And I also believe its effects on the body might not be something that you're looking for.
Yeah. At least if you're like outside of the home, you know, save
yes,
it.
I don't
for...
have a Starbucks Reserve in my home. So yes, I will be outside
of the
home.
You can buy one and bring it back.
Yeah. Yes.
How do you make coffee at home, or do you get it out
God.
Of the house?
Oh God. Quick first to Food News. My wife is obsessed with our new Nespresso.
Oh,
she went to the
nice.
Nespresso store and she came back with like $4,000 worth of Nespresso cups. She had such a great experience in the Nespresso store. She raved about it for minutes. And I had to listen to it, pretend to be interested.
Okay. So sorry, Joey. Nespressos are great. It took me a long time to really understand how to use it. I don't have one. I'm a Keurig person. But I support the Nespresso life. It's like brother and sister.
Yeah.
It is like a real game changer. It is so perfect for like just serving your own personal coffee needs, not having to worry about who else might be having your pot of coffee with you. And there are so many good pod options for Nespresso. I want to recommend.
Oh my God. So, please. Are there so many? She came back. Like, you know how people turn weed and make it nerdy?
Uh-huh.
Like, well, this is an indoor sativa strain mixed with this sour diesel and OG Kush. And you're just like, I do like, what? Like, that's what she's done with coffee.
Okay.
She breaks out the different, like, you know, rolls of pods. She's like, well, this one has notes of hazelnut and there's a little bit of gunmetal. And then she breaks out another one. It's like pink. And she's like, well, this has like rose petal hints. And I don't need to know anything more about the flavors of Nespresso pods.
I want to recommend to you, Joey, and to our listeners, Grind Nespresso pods. Grind is a coffee shop in London, and I have them when I stay at the hotel in London, or excuse me, the hotel in LA that I always go to.
Okay.
So fucking good. Grind Nespresso pods. Check them out.
I will.
I mean, I guess go to Grind too if you're in London.
I think we currently have about 6 months worth of Nespresso pods.
Okay, so well, in 6 months, check it out.
Yeah, when we re-up, yeah.
All right, moving on. Over to Israel, where they have invented lab-grown eel.
Hmm.
They used embryonic cells to create eel in the lab. It's kind of like a different version of like farming fish in some ways.
Sure.
And they say it tastes the same as the genuine eel, and it could be used in sushi in the future.
I'm going to hold judgment on this one because there's a part of me that's like, I don't know, that's kind of gross. We don't know the long-term implications of this. Like, is this going to just create a generation of just people with three arms and tails? Who knows? That's a little weird. I maybe pump the brakes. But I could also look at it like lab-grown diamonds, where it's like, hey, guess what? There's plenty of them. Doesn't hurt the environment. And it's the same thing, basically.
Oh, I don't think there was like anything weird about it, except like, does it taste good? Like, I don't think it's even different
You don't feel... Imagine... I would feel like if I had a bunch of lab-grown eel and then I had a baby and that baby had like an eel sticking out of its ribs, I'd be like, oh, of course.
I guess because it's made from embryonic cells, I'm not like they've invented it. It's like they've harvested eels. It's sort of like IVF for eel.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that seems fine.
Sure.
Farming a fish, I think, is like also in general, like gross.
Yeah, so, pretty gnarly.
Yeah. So which sounds better?
One thing I found interesting about this article, quick note, in 2000, Japan consumed 160,000 tons of eel. Think about that. A ton is 2,000 pounds. That's 160,000 times two. That's going to get you to 32. 3,200,000 pounds. That's a lot of eel.
That's a lot.
It's down 80%. So maybe we need some of this.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Might need it. Also, maybe just like eat less eel. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's also an option.
I find eel to be fine. I like it. I don't dislike it, but I don't order it.
I never order it either. I'd like absolutely
never.
But if
it's there, I'll eat it. But I do not order it.
Same. All right. Next, let's move on to our heist of the week. Jacoby, over to you.
This is a good one. This is a good one. First of all, I didn't know about the history of this restaurant. This restaurant's called La Tour d'Argent, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in Paris. Mm-hmm. It originally was founded. It dates back to 1582. Just
Things
think
are
about
old
that.
In Europe.
1582. It's been described as the oldest restaurant in Paris. However, that's been it's been refuted.
Disputed.
But sure, whatever. One of my favorite things, this is one of my favorite sentences of the whole thing. I'll get to the heist in a second. This is my favorite detail. Its famous customers have included Charlie Chapman, Theodore and Flanker and Roosevelt, Salvador Dali, Brad Pitt, and Angelina Jolie. I think that is the most random selection of people. It's just like, I'm sure other more famous, more appropriate people have been to this restaurant since 1582. Like, how do Mr. and Mrs. Smith get grouped in with Franklin and Theodore Roosevelt?
Counterpoint. At the time in which they went, they probably were all equal levels of famous. And so I feel like perhaps it makes sense. They went through like different decades and they picked people that like you would have known. They're probably the most
from that era,
from that region. They're probably the most that era, the most famous person who came.
I mean, I'm a big Salvador Dali guy, but I just found this to be a weird selection of people to talk about. Okay, fine.
Oh, just one more counterpoint to that. I would just say that the Roosevelts are the outliers. The rest are just, you know, celebs in the arts.
Then we have, in 2007, this is the restaurant that inspired Ratatouille.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. Okay. So they would.
It does look a lot like it.
It does. Yeah. I mean, apparently the director studied the restaurant for tons of detail and like, you know, took sketches and everything to make sure it was appropriate. Okay. To the heist. Now, they have 300,000 bottles of, quote, the largest cellar in Paris. And what they did, because they reopened in 2020, so they did an inventory of their 300,000 bottles of wine, and they found that an estimated 83 bottles were missing. First of all, I think that's incredible. Like, if you do an inventory of 300,000 anything and you ended up having 83 missing, I think that's a reason to throw a parade.
It's also amazing that they just could figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could
know what's going on in Chelsea.
Identify the 83. Yeah.
Remember the Chelsea thing? Like,
yeah.
It's hard to keep track of these bottles of wine. So I thought that was a huge win, but apparently it's a huge problem because of the 83 bottles that were missing, it's about $1.3 million worth of wine, including some that could be worth up to like $500,000 and some very expensive bottles. But the long and the short of this to me is, wonderful restaurant. I would love to eat there, but I thought they did a great job of maintaining 299,917 bottles of wine, and they're folks on the 83 that are missing. I think they're a real wine glass half empty type of restaurant.
And you're going half full, obviously.
Yeah. I would say like 99% full, to be honest with you.
I'm just curious, like, who would have access to these bottles of wine?
Are you trying to hint?
I'm not saying it's inside job.
What?
I'm saying it's like, it's even tighter than that. It's like, there's only a few people probably who could get down there. So it's not it's not like a heist. It's like one of your employees stole.
Yeah. Or I honestly think that it could just be human error. These 83 bottles over the course of that amount of time. Yeah. Or just like you bring up two to show two and maybe one stays up on the floor or something.
Someone is sweating it. That's all I know.
Oh, they're sweating. Do you know why they're sweating? Another little nugget from this restaurant. Now, this to me, I'll reserve my thoughts. I want to hear your take to this fact, which can easily go just unnoticed. The wine list weighs around 8 kilograms.
Okay.
And has to be wheeled out to diners on a trolley. Your thoughts?
How many pounds are in a kilogram?
2.2.
So it's 16 pounds.
Yeah, I'm about 18 pounds, 19 pounds.
I don't think that you should have to roll that out. That can be carried.
Great point, Juliet.
It's not heavy.
Think about a 20-pound barbell. It's like heavier than a normal book.
It's like,
but I can get from the kitchen to the floor.
You just like, it's not that far
away. It's not that hard. Yeah,
it's not that big of a deal.
Babies, we don't need wheels.
Babies weigh much more. People carry
those. Yeah, carry them around all the time.
Yeah.
It's a great point, Juliet.
So I think they're just doing it for show. I don't think it really has to be held. Unless they've used some really fine, or I think it could be held unless they've used some really fine parchment and they're worried about like finger oils getting on there.
Oh, no. Then what's the point of that?
The consumers are not touching it.
Number two, I imagine this has got a lot of pages, right?
Yeah.
So what are you doing to my experience here?
It sounds like a phone book.
It sounds, yes. And it's just like, if you gave me a huge book and were like, here's our wine list, sir, we'll be back in a little bit, I'd be like, what is this, a joke? Is this a torture?
I would be like, I'm here for you to lead me on a luxurious experience. So tell me what to
get. Let's talk about it.
Three options and we'll pick.
And then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that is just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
There's a trolley for the wine list.
It's absurd.
Completely I don't want to go to this place anymore.
Okay.
Ratatouille, great film.
A lot of other great places to go in Paris, so you don't have to go.
Let's go to Mexico.
Okay, let's go to Mexico, which is the ancestral home of the tableside Caesar salad.
Is it just tableside or Caesar salad as a whole?
Caesar salad as a whole.
As a whole.
Or specifically to, well, I think it did originally start in Italy. But then one Italian guy emigrated and he went to Mexico. And he brought it with him there.
See, I thought they were claiming to be the original Caesar salad.
No. In 1924, they started doing this special tableside Caesar salad at this place called the Hotel Caesar in Tijuana, in Mexico.
Tijuana, of all places. I was shocked. I was like, huh.
I know.
Tijuana brought us the Caesar salad.
And this guy named Caesar Cardini is the one who brought it to Tijuana. And there's now a chef in Tijuana named Javier Plasencia, who was featured by Daniel Hernandez in the Los Angeles Times. And they talked about how he's revived this custom of the tableside Caesar. And I got to say, it sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, probably Javier, but sure.
You're right.
I'm going to say it sounds really good. Mm. And as someone who has eaten a million Caesar salads, prefers a Caesar salad, loves a Caesar salad, I couldn't tell you exactly what was in the dressing, but when they explain it, if you mind if I read this part,
sure.
Quote, first, a rich anchovy paste is scooped in. This is followed by large dabs of Dijon mustard, minced garlic, a squeeze of lime juice, crushed black pepper, and shaved Parmesan cheese. The mixture begins to take shape as a server elegantly adds an egg yolk.
Mm.
That sounds so good.
So good. You didn't know what was in a Caesar dressing?
Not really. Okay. No. So I mean, I knew those things were in there. If you like put a gun in my head and I had to guess, I wouldn't guess lime juice.
I feel like,
but I would get there.
I feel like Americans don't like the idea of the anchovy. Yeah. So it's like really hidden. But that has sort of like bastardized what Caesar salad is as a result.
I am pro anchovy on Caesar salad. Hardcore pro anchovy.
I like it in the dressing.
Of course.
But an anchovy itself is like too salty and briny for me.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
Just not my taste. But I am not like grossed out by it.
I like it when they ask, oh, would you like anchovies? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is a place that respects the Caesar legacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't judge people that don't want it. I just prefer it.
Not what they want.
But I thought this was fascinating to me. So it's like tableside guac, but they do tableside Caesar. It sounds good.
It sounds awesome. If you want to have it, you can go to the Hotel Caesar. It's had a renaissance thanks to Javier Plasencia.
I also like the way that they present their romaine as a stock that you kind of like use a knife and fork to cut. How do you feel about that?
Love, because also one of my favorite like just foods is grilled romaine. Like I love a grilled heart of romaine, which is very similar.
I don't like it when it gets super wilty. If you can grill it, but not have it be like
a char,
wilty.
But not totally wilted.
Exactly.
It's so delicious.
A grilled Caesar salad. Mm.
That sounds really good.
So good.
If you could give us a call at 646-STEW-138. Is it 138 or 148?
What happened to you?
I think I'm losing my mind.
138.
It's 138.
Yeah.
646-STEW-138. If you could give us recommendations of restaurants where they do a really good grilled romaine, I'd really appreciate it. Like anywhere in the country. World, perhaps.
Okay. Road trip.
All right. One more story, Jacobs. Question for you. Who invented butter chicken?
I don't know.
Well, they're going to be deciding in court in India.
This starts out as a like, because we've actually discussed this before.
We talked about it with, I think, masala.
Tikka masala in England. So I read this again. I was like, oh, this is going to be someone saying that they invented it and someone saying they didn't. But this actually turns into like a real like family versus family, like Hatfield McCoy sort of a thing. Because there's two restaurants. There's Moti Mahal, which is an older restaurant that I believe was started in the 40s in India. Mm-hmm. And there's a new restaurant, I'm gonna get this wrong, Daryajan, I'll call it. Probably mispronounced that. But that opened in 2019. So what Moti Mahal is saying, we invented butter chicken. The family of the people that are proprietors of the former are saying,
Daryaganj.
Yes, Daryaganj. We were right next to you. when it was invented. Therefore, we can claim being the inventors of the butter chicken. And this is my favorite part of the whole thing, is the Garage family is seeking $240,000. We'll get to that in damages. Also alleging that Dairy Gange has copied the layout of Moti Mahal's website and the look and feel of its restaurants. You bit our Squarespace website.
I was going to say, they probably are all using the same
template.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love that they're like, okay, we can talk about the butter chicken thing, but also in this 2,700-page deposition, you're going to find that you took our website.
They're suing over $240,000.
Seems a little light to me.
Seems low.
Seems a little low.
For who invented butter chicken,
yeah.
A foundational dish all over the world?
Yeah, and this is like chain restaurant versus chain restaurant. Seems like there's more at stake than $240,000. I think the Gaudreau family should be going
harder. Gaudreau,
yeah.
This is a big week for presidents eating at restaurants on Food News.
I saw that.
Moti Mahal also said that Nixon and India's first prime minister, Nehru, both ate there.
Nixon? So, that's what you're going with?
Well, there's some been reclaiming of Nixon's legacy, I would say, in the last 30 years.
Yes, there really has. The 2,752-page court filing has been sued. What could possibly be in 2,752 pages? I mean, the wine list being that long, it kind of makes sense.
I don't know. I will say
that. Is there a trolley? Do you think it has a trolley?
No, they wouldn't do that there. I will say there's a picture of the CEO of Dairy Gange and the food, and it looks really delicious.
Yeah.
Looks really fucking good.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to today's taste test. It's a surprise.
Surprise taste test.
Furnished by producer Mike Wargon. I'm going to take the
reveal
bag.
Reveal it. We do not know what this is. It's being revealed
do,
right
do,
now.
Do.
Oh, I know what this is.
What is it?
This is dulce juice.
Oh, my God.
Dulce juice from Spain. When we went to Finca...
Calabacera.
Finca Calabacera. There was some dulce juice. It was the... What negra?
Sapote
negra. Mike, where did you find this?
I bought it. I bought the fruit online.
Oh, my God. How? Where? From Dulce?
It was like fruithunters.com.
Oh, my God. Fruithunters. I never even heard of it.
Sapote juice. Did you go back to the audio and find the recipe?
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned that.
So so you know, this is a what now?
Black sapote.
Black sapote. Oh, my God. And this is the same bottle that she used as well.
This is awesome.
This makes me so happy. Mike, you're a great producer. So when we first were drinking it, it was fantastic. It was amazing. It was more refreshing than it looks. It looks like molasses, but it tastes like a watery, apple cidery kind of a vibe. But
it looks so
it's
good.
Not just black sapote juice. What else is in it?
It's 1 liter orange juice, 1 liter water, and then 1 to 2 black sapotes.
This one's thicker. Ooh,
oh,
there
no,
we go.
We're good. Oh, God. This
Should
is
I shake
so
it up
exciting.
A little bit more, you think?
Well, I got a spoon here. Mix it up a little bit. Oh, Mike, this is so fantastic.
Mike, you crushed it.
Oh,
how exciting.
My God. I remember the first time this hit my lips. It really does look like
a
dark, dark chestnut beer.
Yeah. It's like some kind of potion or a nectar.
Yeah. It looks like something you would drink before bed, but it is not. It is a morning refreshing beverage.
Oh, it's really good. It remains really good.
Yeah, this is it.
This is so good.
God, Mike.
The fact that you can get it online is huge.
Well, you didn't buy the juice, right? You made the juice.
I made the juice.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He just bought the fruit.
Oh, my God, Mike. Great job.
Mike is going the extra mile for the 100th episode.
Mike, you crushed it. Thank you. That was a great trip. Thanks to United. Go to Tenerife.
Yeah.
I loved it. Mike, thank you so much.
What do you think Dulce is doing right now?
Probably kicking it. She has a really nice home.
Yeah, she does.
It's warm. I hope she wasn't impacted by that big fire. I don't think she was.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so either. She's good.
All right. Let's move on to personal food news.
Okay, great.
I went away for the weekend and I got back kind of late on Sunday. Mm. I didn't feel like going to the grocery store to get like milk for the next morning or whatever. So on Sunday, before I got home, I put an order in with Whole Foods to have my food delivered. It was like a pretty small order, but I was just like, mostly it was like, I'm going to need milk tomorrow morning. Mm. So I did.
For cereal, for coffee?
For coffee.
Okay.
I did Whole Foods delivery. The time that I selected was 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Mm. It arrived at 5:30 a.m. A person delivered my groceries at 5:30 a.m., like rang the doorbell. And I was like, I'm up, so this is cool for me. But this seems insane for most
people. No, that's not okay. The fact that you're up and you can roll with it is fine. But if you give me a window of 6 to 8,
yeah,
let's hit the earliest you can be there is 6:01. The absolute earliest.
It led me to believe that Whole Foods is open early for shoppers, like that.
Yeah, for online deliveries and so. Yeah, that makes perfect sense of people putting stuff together and whatnot.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. However, if you arrive at the location where you're supposed to deliver it at 6 at 5:30, I feel like you need to spin the block. Sit on the stoop, look at TikTok, whatever you got to do. But like, you should not be ringing my bell at 5:30 in the morning if I ask for delivery at 6.
I was like, what do the neighbors think? Like, this guy just coming in groceries at 5:30.
Huge window, too, by the way.
6:08.
I'm worried about your coffee. What if they came at 8? Like,
yeah,
you would have just had a cup of black before. Would have
been a shitty morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been shitty. So I was like, okay, this works for me. But only me, probably. 5:30 is really early. 5:30
a.m. Super early.
We're 90 minutes out from sunrise. So, tough.
I have some personal food news.
Oh, okay.
It's a food news follow-up, and it's kind of sad.
Oh, no.
I've revisited Capriati's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as, you know...
Did you get the Bobby?
As I'm concerned about Joe Biden's tenure in the Oval Office, I've just wanted to enjoy the Bobby, his favorite sandwich, and I went back to the Bobby at Capriati's, which I've had twice before and had great experiences, and I ordered online, and I asked for gravy, and they didn't have gravy, but it took them 15 minutes to find out they didn't have gravy.
Oh, no.
And I got the Bobby, no gravy, and I ate the Bobby, and it was dry.
Dry as fuck.
So dry. The bread felt it was like it was from 3 days ago.
Oh, no.
The sandwich was like one of those things where it's like you take a bite, you have to chew it for like 90 seconds before you can swallow it. You have to swallow it in little pieces. It was a really bad Capriati's experience. And Quincy had some too. And he was like, I think we're off the Bobby. I was like, we are off the Bobby.
Oh, no.
I feel really bad for Capriati's. I believe in you. I've had 66% of my Bobby experiences there have been great, but it just wasn't a great experience.
That's really rough.
I know.
You know what I was thinking about would be like a good food news field trip, very basic. When I came back on Sunday, I was getting lunch for the train ride and I was like selecting between a few different places. And I was like, I really want Potbelly, but I know it just won't fill me up.
Yeah, well.
Well, let's just like go to Potbelly together one time.
I love Potbelly.
It
smells good in there.
It smells good. The sandwiches are good.
And do you know one thing I love about the Potbelly experience? Because Subway, Potbelly, Capriati's, those are always solo missions for me. But if I go with you, what we can do is each get a sandwich and then split it. And so you get half of a sando, I get half of a sando. It's a huge win.
For some reason, they're just like better at toasting sandwiches than any other place.
They are. And the bread's good. The Italian's good. But I've always been curious about other things on the menu, so we can do that.
Okay, great. There's one nearby, so we could walk there.
Let's do it.
It'll be a great food news.
Exciting.
All right, let's get to our very special listener food news for our 100th episode. Better be good.
Hey, guys. This is Lauren from Atlanta, a longtime listener. I have two questions for you guys. Both of these are inspired by my father-in-law. He loves whenever he comes over for dinner to ask various questions. One of his go-tos is rank French fries in order of favorite to least favorite. I'd love to hear what you guys think on this and maybe even do a taste test for curly fries, waffle fries, shoestring. My other question is, and this is another one that he does, if it was your last meal on earth, what would it be? My go-to, this is probably a hot take, is a burger cooked on the grill in the backyard. You can't beat it. It's just so good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for calling, Lauren.
Wow. We don't have another half hour, but
I agree. My final meal would be a really fucking good cheeseburger.
That's a really good, yeah. I like the grill bat. Yeah, like that's a really good call.
I want a fancy one. I'm sorry, Lauren.
That's a really good haul. I'm eating so much, too. It's not even a meal. It's more of like a spread.
I want to just say something. I think there is no debate that the worst version of fries, though not bad, but like just sort of like the worst version, is waffle fries.
Okay. There's a couple. I need to establish the rules of engagement first.
Okay.
So this does not involve flavoring the fries. So Cajun fries, seasoned fries, truffle fries. That's all.
Well, I think curly fries are like inherently seasoned usually.
That's the thing. So let's just, all right, we'll let that happen. But no, we're not adding flavors. They're just French fries or fried potatoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Waffle fries would not be my least favorite.
Wow.
And again, we're taking sweet potato off the table because I don't like sweet potato fries.
It's just not in the conversation.
I don't like the steak fries. I find it's like, if I'm using a knife and fork on my fries, like, what are we even doing here? This is now like a, so this like, is a different dish.
So like diner fries, you're just out.
No, I like diner fries. Those are regular fries. I mean, like steak fries, like wedges. They're basically like wedges with the skin on them. Like big, huge French fries.
Got it.
Those ones are a no-go for me.
Yeah, that's just like a potato wedge.
Top of my head, I'm going, my number one would probably be classic. Okay. Like a sort of classic fry. And then I'm going to go shoestring. And then I'm going curly. And then I'm going waffle. And then I'm going wedge.
Wow. Interesting.
Top of my head.
I think for me, number one is curly fries. Number two, shoestring. Number three, fast food classic.
Yeah.
Number four, diner fries, which is sort of like its own thing. You know what I mean?
Disagree.
Sort of like thick.
Yeah, frozen.
Sometimes if they're grilled really well or baked really well, it tastes good.
They don't grill or bake fries. It's called fries.
If they're fried really well,
okay,
they taste
there you
good.
Go. Okay, good.
Then I agree with you, like wedge fries are just not a thing for me.
Yeah, it's like a different
thing. But I think I still prefer them to waffle fries.
I don't like waffle.
I think they're like the least natural. Like, I'm just like, how do you get that shape with a potato?
They have a fry at J.G. Mellon, which is like known for their burgers, but their fries are like kind of like a scallop shell shape. They're really, really good shapes for dipping.
This is making me hungry.
They're really good. Let's eat.
Okay. Thank you so much to our producer, Mike Wargon, who really went above and beyond with today's taste test. That was
really
awesome.
Did. God, taking me back to Tenerife.
Thank you all for listening for 100 episodes and so many more to come. We'll be back next week.